Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
What is your response to what some of your opponents say, that abortion is vastly different from other procedures and therefore needs higher medical standards? Is there any merit in that argument?
Absolutely none. I mean, again, abortion is one of the safest medical procedures in the country. One of the most incredible things that I think that has happened since the Roe decision. And I talked to doctors who were around pre-Roe who said, you know, routinely young, healthy women were dying in emergency rooms across this country simply because they had no access to terminate a pregnancy in a medical setting.
That's an excerpt from Moyers & Company. Bill Moyers speaking recently with Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. She's saying that abortion is not only much safer than it used to be before it was legalized by Roe v. Wade, but it's one of the safest, what'd she say? One of the safest medical procedures in the country. I wonder about two things regarding that. Is it actually safe, as she says, and for whom? And should we regard it as a medical procedure? I mean, I know it takes place with medically trained people, doctors, whatnot. But just because a doctor does it, does that mean it's a medical procedure, abortion? We'll talk about that with Scott Klusendorf here on this Friday afternoon, August the 1st. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We are coming to you live on this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, in the last 20 minutes or so of Issues Etc., we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That's just a game we like to play with our listeners. We gather together four soundbites from this week's and previous week's Issues Etc. audio. We play them for you. All you have to do is listen. And then after you have listened, you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email with your vote, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or you can vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Your vote decides which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, and one of our lucky listeners and voters will get the LPR bundle package, and I have Issues t-shirt and Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, mouse pad, and notepad that goes to one of the voters during Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in about 40 minutes here on the program. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest. He joins us to talk about recent abortion statements made by the president of Planned Parenthood. He is founder and president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
It's good to be back, Todd, but I have a big question for you. With all the times I've been a guest on your show, how come I've never gotten the Issues Etc. t-shirt or coffee mug or mouse pad?
Wait, it's yours. We will send it to you. I will send the secret hand signal to Jeff on the other side of the glass, and we'll make sure that you get one because you've been very kind to us for the many times you've been on.
Well, when I drink my coffee, I'll be forever reminded of you.
All right, good. It's a deal. Cecile Richards here is making some statements when she was talking with Bill Moyers about the safety of abortion. She essentially argues that abortion is safer, much safer than it used to be prior to Roe v. Wade for women, and that it's, in addition to that, one of the safest medical procedures in the country. What's your response to all of that?
Well, you hit on the big problem with the statement a moment ago when you raised the question, safe for whom? It's certainly not safe for the fetuses in question, and that's the real issue here. Her argument there entirely is question begging. That is, she assumes the unborn are not human beings when that's precisely the question that's in play in the abortion debate. She makes no argument in this interview why we should consider unborn non-humans. She just assumes they're non-human. But that's the question we need to resolve. So the first question is, safe for whom? The next thing is a factual reply to her. It's simply false that women were dying by the thousands from illegal abortion prior to Roe v. Wade. Look, every woman's death from abortion, illegal or legal, is a tragedy. We all agree on that. But there is an empirical claim she's making here that thousands of women died before abortion was legal in the back alleys of America, and it's simply false. And you don't need to take my word for it as a pro-life advocate. We can look at sources on the other side of the issue that claim this. For example, Dr. Mary Calderon, the former medical director of Planned Parenthood, wrote a piece in the 1960s when allegedly these women were dying by the thousands from back alley abortions. And in that article, Calderon states that the vast majority of illegal abortions are done safely by physicians in good standing with the law, and that the reason the death rate is as low as it is, and she made it clear that it was a very low death rate, so much that she said it almost wasn't worth remarking on, the reason the death rate was so low is that the widespread introduction of penicillin had rendered post-op surgical procedures safe. In other words, no more infections. And that's not coming from a pro-life advocate. That's coming from a leader in Planned Parenthood herself. In addition to this, we know from people like Lawrence Lader and Bernard Nathanson, the co-founders of the National Abortion Rights Action League, that the figure of 5,000 to 10,000 women a year dying from illegal abortions was made up out of thin air and sold to a sympathetic media. So the idea that women died is true. The idea that they died in 5,000 to 10,000 a year is simply false.
So are you saying that in and around the time of Roe, there were advocates for legalized abortion who are arguing for abortion based upon its safety prior to Roe and the low death rate prior to Roe? They were arguing for abortion based upon the low death rate from abortion.
Well, basically what Calderon was saying is if we're going to make a case for abortion as a public health issue, the way not to do it is to argue for it being unsafe, because it simply isn't. And it's not safe, or I should say it's not unsafe for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's being done by physicians in good standing in their community, not guys with rusty coat hangers in the back alley. And secondly, the widespread introduction of penicillin has cut down the infection rate. So she's saying, look, that's not going to work as a way to argue here. And unfortunately, what happened, of course, is when you have a media unwilling to dig in and find the truth, they're going to accept the inflated numbers of the abortion choice activists. And that's precisely what happened.
So where did the myth, come from? I mean, how would you describe it? You said it was kind of made up out of thin air and accepted by a gullible media. Where did that myth of all these deaths come from?
Well, Bernard Nathanson, in his book, Aborting America, again, he was one of the co-founders of the National Abortion Rights Action League and later became a pro-life advocate. But in his earlier days, when he was a champion of abortion rights, he and Lawrence Lader simply made up these numbers. And he's real clear in the book that there was no statistical credibility to them. In fact, even other thinkers sympathetic to abortion, guys like Daniel Callahan, Dr. Christopher Teets, who was a statistician for Planned Parenthood, guys like that called the claim of 5,000 to 10,000 deaths a year unmitigated nonsense. And they were very clear that there was no way to sustain those kind of numbers and have any kind of credibility statistically at all. Again, these are not guys who support the pro-life view. These are people who support the other view. And I think the point we need to make here is Cecile Richards is being sneaky here. Look, it's certainly true the law can't stop all abortions any more than laws against rape stop all rape. There are going to be some people who break the law and have illegal abortions. But notice they're not being forced to have abortions. They choose to have these abortions. I mean, claiming that if we make abortion illegal, it's going to force women to have dangerous back alley abortions is silly. It would be like me saying that unless you put me on early Social Security, you're going to force me to rob a bank. Nonsense.
What about her characterization, and it seems to be accepted by Bill Moyers as well, that abortion is a medical procedure? What do you make of that characterization of abortion?
Well, I don't think abortion is health care. Pregnancy is not a disease, and unborn children are not viruses. So I don't understand why we call it health care the way she's defining it. It certainly would be health care if we're thinking about treating both the mother and the child as patients, but not when you're simply saying health care is defined as the right to kill one of those patients.
So it's not technically a medical procedure because it doesn't fit within a sensical definition of medicine.
Yeah, the traditional idea of medicine is we're doing something that benefits the patient. In this case, we're ignoring one of the patients. were in fact killing him. So it's not health care or medical procedure in the traditional way it would be understood. Only in the modern way, which says consensus is everything, and my personal choice trumps all other concerns.
There was also a kind of an unstated, well, to me it sounded like a bit of an exaggeration on Moyer's part when he was asking the question that abortion is so radically different from other medical procedures that it has to be held to a higher standard. I don't know if I've ever heard any pro-life advocate who's arguing for, say, the regulation of abortion clinics argue that it needs to be held to a higher medical standard. Are you familiar with anyone doing that?
No, you're exactly right, Todd. What we've had are abortion control legislation that's been introduced in the various states that has simply tried to get the clinics to comply with reasonable or regular standards that exist for all other medical clinics. And, of course, the abortion industry has fought that tooth and nail. They don't want the same standards applied to their clinics. And the result of that is we get Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia. So on one hand, they're arguing we're for women, we want safety, we want protection. On the other hand, they fight every kind of reasonable regulation of these clinics imaginable.
When we come back, we're going to hear a few other things Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, had to say in her conversation with Bill Moyers, one of them responding to the Hobby Lobby decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, and the other talking about the Supreme Court's recent ruling on abortion clinic buffer zones. We're talking with Scott Klusendorf, founder and president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Recent statements made by Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Be ready always to give a reason, an apologia, a reason for the hope that is within you, yet with gentleness and reverence.
Craig Parton speaking at this year's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
There is the apologetical task in a nutshell. Not with arrogance or beating people up or I gotcha, I got a snazzy answer to every question. But in humility, God has allowed us to stand on the shoulders of giants in apologetics. It grieves me that we are so generally ignorant about apologetics and the heritage we have been given as Christians.
You can listen to Craig Parton's presentation, Making the Case for the Historical Jesus, on an audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
I'm thinking we should buy it. I mean, people can't find where we're located at. We buy it, we move it right outside the parking lot here. No problem finding Lutheran Public Radio.
That's true. We could just say, look for the giant ketchup bottle.
We're not going to be there. We're not going to fire off our rifles, and we're not going to put a flag over his coffin and act like he was a veteran. How much more is that true for the Christian? We're not going to put a pall on somebody who hasn't been baptized.
And he says, gee, he says, I saw you do that. That made me think, and he goes, what if we really believed what we said?
I think where this comes from is the form of many of these hymns, bar form. And somebody somewhere, the only bar that they knew about was where you're going to drink.
In about 20 minutes, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That's a taste of the four soundbites that we'll play for you. And then your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That's coming up here live this Friday afternoon, August the 1st, in about 20 minutes. So get ready to vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. We're talking about recent abortion statements made by the president of Planned Parenthood. Scott is founder and president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You'll find a link to Life Training Institute and to The Case for Life under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Scott, I got one more question before we hear more from Cecile Richards, and that is this notion that there are kind of reasonable expectations. Are we talking about things like an abortion clinic here in this area routinely is in the news because there are ambulances outside?
Yeah.
Usually it's shielded by people holding up sheets or something. And something's gone wrong in that abortion clinic. An ambulance has been called. And one of the things that pro-lifers want required in law is that an abortion clinic simply have a connection to a local emergency room for that kind of case where something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I don't even have to make the claim that abortion is intrinsically unsafe for the woman. That's not the claim I'm making. We are simply saying here that abortion clinics, like every other healthcare clinic, ought to be held to certain medical standards to regulate who gets hired, regulate the kind of medical procedures that are done, and what the safety standards are, at least for the mother. It's obviously not safe for the child. But these are exactly the kind of things that pro-abortionists fight. And you made a great point there. You got a local clinic where an ambulance keeps showing up out in front of it. That ought to be looked at, but yet the other side often fights these regulations.
All right. There was more to the conversation between Bill Moyers on Moyers & Company and Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood. He also asked for her reaction in the course of that conversation, for her reaction to the Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby decision. Here's what she had to say.
How could the rights of one CEO, you know, or the beliefs, the religious beliefs of one CEO and his family, trump the right of thousands of women to make their own decision? Nothing about the Affordable Care Act requires women to use birth control. But as we're already seeing, millions of women are already benefiting from being able to make that decision themselves, to make their own choice about what kind of birth control they'd like to use if they want to use it, and to get it paid for and to help plan their families.
All right. Does Cecile Richards appear to understand the actual issues at play in the Hobby Lobby decision recently from the Supreme Court?
I don't think so. I mean, this is crazy. You can't force your employer to be involved in your health care, as she would define it, and then tell that same employer to get his hands off your health care. They're trying to talk out both sides of their mouth here. Look, this case was not about restricting women's rights to access birth control. Not receiving free contraceptives from your employer is not the same as being denied access to those things. And yet Cecile Richards is trying to make it look like that was the issue. The other thing that is being confused here, let's be clear, the Hobby Lobby case was about abortifacients, not contraceptives in general. Hobby Lobby had no problem with 16 of the 20 drugs required by the HHS mandate. They took issue with four that they believed, and I will add, with good reason on most of them, could function as abortifacients, drugs like Ella, that clearly can cause abortion in the event of the failure of the primary contraceptive element of that drug. So Hobby Lobby was really taking issue with the four they had a moral objection to that related to abortion. They were making no statement whatsoever about their employees having a right to access contraception.
But, you know, this is a woman who works for an organization that should know more about abortifacients with respect to abortifacient / contraception than anyone else. And she is this. It's hard for me to imagine that someone who runs Planned Parenthood actually doesn't understand that issue.
Yeah, I find that surprising as well. It's very, very odd. And yet, over and over again, we see the issues of contraception and abortion confused, bundled together. And they take something that is clearly an abortifacient like Ella or RU486 in years past And they bring that in and bundle it up with the idea of contraception and say, there you go, you pro-life conservatives, you hate women, you want to deny them basic health care and contraception, when in reality what we're talking about in this case with Ella in particular, which was one of the abortifacient drugs that Hobby Lobby opposed, that functions as an abortifacient, not a contraceptive device.
I wonder about this, and that is, lurking behind contraception, contraception kind of becomes the stalking horse. We see the connection between the abortifacient slash contraception. The pro-choice side, Cecile Richards, apparently doesn't see the connection. She thinks it's only about contraception. But is there any doubt in your mind that contraception in the HHS debate is, in fact, a stalking horse for abortion?
Well, we know for a fact it is, in that HHS mandate provided for things like I mentioned a moment ago, Ella, which functions as an abortifacient, and nobody in the scientific community is denying that at all. Apparently, Cecile Richards has relevant knowledge we're all unaware of, but everybody else knows how that drug functions.
Here again is Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, in a conversation with Bill Moyers recently. She's commenting here on the Supreme Court's recent ruling on abortion clinic buffer zones.
Well, we're already seeing in Massachusetts that absolutely immediately after that decision, eliminating the buffer zone, we had record numbers of protesters outside of the following women all the way up to the door of our health center in Massachusetts. These are not all kindly elderly ladies simply whispering in the ears. And even if they were, it is the right of women in this country to be able to access health care that they need without harassment and without the advice of dozens of people outside their health center. I mean, can you imagine if men in this country, before going into their doctor, had to walk through a gauntlet of protesters telling them, you know, whether it's not to get a colonoscopy or just go down the list. It's incredible. I think now we'll see challenges to buffer zones across the country. And it's hard not to escape the irony of the enormous buffer zone that the Supreme Court enjoys in front of their court and why we can't afford that same right to women who are simply trying to access health care. I just don't understand.
What's your response, Scott?
Well, she certainly wasn't too worried about the buffer zone in front of the Supreme Court when it was the health care law in general that was under discussion at the court 2 years ago, but never mind. I love how she equated here harassment with giving advice. I don't know if you caught that, but that was an amazing sentence she uttered there. She said that these women are being harassed, and then she went on to define what she meant by that. Giving advice is harassment. This is very typical of the other side. They don't want to debate us. They don't want to engage us. They simply want to label us as harassing people and then say, you know what, anytime you give us advice or you make your point of view known, you're harassing us. This is ridiculous. You know what, her statement there is so condescending to women, it's laughable. She is assuming that women are inherently weak, that they can't handle an old woman in front of an abortion clinic giving them a different point of view. Are women really that weak intellectually? All apart because somebody gives them a counterpoint of view? This is exactly the point, by the way, that feminist Naomi Wolf raised in an important article in the New Republic a couple of decades ago. She took issue with people advocating the position Cecile Richards advocates here. Naomi Wolf said, look, when pro-life protesters show pictures of bloody aborted fetuses and pro-choice women complain about that, what's happening here is the pro-choice women are essentially making the claim that they are so inherently weak they can't handle looking at the truth about an important decision they're going to make. And Wolf went on to say this, that's not feminism. That is a condescending view of women, and I think here that this very statement made by Cecile Richards is indicative of the low view of women she really has.
Now, she does something else in that comment, actually two things, and I want you to comment on both of them. One is she says, look, what if men had to run a gauntlet of protesters or whatever if they were going to get a colonoscopy?
Yeah, well, first of all, why are people protesting abortion? Let's get clear. If they're not protesting abortion because they protest a surgical procedure in particular. They are protesting it because of what that surgical procedure does to an innocent human being. That surgical procedure intentionally kills an innocent human being. Men going in for a vasectomy, it doesn't do that. So, of course, there's not protesters outside of the urologist's office. So her comparison there is silly on the face of it.
The other thing that I'm curious about here, since she seems to kind of be mourning the death of the buffer zone, there are going to be challenges all over the country. It seems to be resigned to the fact that it's going to fall not only Massachusetts. What were buffer zones around abortion clinics really for, Scott?
Well, this came about in the early 90s when there were a series of Supreme Court cases, largely in response to the big demonstrations in places like Wichita, Atlanta, and San Francisco conducted by Operation Rescue. And these buffer zones were designed to push clinic protesters or clinic people who were or people praying outside the abortion clinic away from the entrance on grounds that it was stopping women from getting inside. Well, yeah, Operation Rescue was indeed blocking access peacefully to abortion clinics. And so the courts basically jumped in and in a couple of different rulings said that if you do that, you're going to get real severe penalties. And now what's happening is we're seeing some of these buffer zones push back the other way.
Do you agree with her that there will be challenged buffer zones across the country?
There could be. I don't know in this particular case how far the court's ruling went. I saw the summary of it, but I have not read it in detail. And that's simply because my organization is largely involved in pro-life apologetics. We're not out doing the clinic protesting. I'm not here to oppose people who do, but that's not what we do. So that's not a case I read in detail.
We've talked to you before about comments that Cecile Richards has made as president of Planned Parenthood. She's just one in a long line of presidents of that organization. Have you noticed any change in the rhetoric over the years? Have you noticed a change in tactics on the part of the pro-abortion forces when they get a chance to basically say what they want to say in a forum like Moyers and Company?
Yeah, there's a slight change, and let me highlight what it is. It's a shift away from saying, oh, it's a blob of tissue, or women have a choice, period. Rather, what they're saying now is this is a private decision, and we shouldn't judge women. There are so many complex considerations we need to take into account, and we simply must leave the woman to make her own personal private decision. And my response to that, Todd, is this. Cecile, I agree with you completely. We should trust women to make their own personal decisions. We shouldn't interfere with her privacy. You're right, Cecile, that we should trust women and not impose state regulation on their decision-making process on the issue of abortion. I agree with you completely if what? If the unborn are not human. And if Cecile is prepared to give me a scientific argument showing me the unborn are not members of the human family, and a philosophical argument showing me that even if they are, we have no duty to value them, I'm prepared to agree with her completely. But I didn't hear one argument in that interview for the unborn not being members of the human family. She simply assumed they weren't. In other words, it was a gigantic exercise in begging the question.
With only 30 seconds here, Scott, should reporters who deal with Cecile Richards or other pro-choice advocates, prominent pro-choice advocates, should they simply have the honesty to say who are the unborn and make your case medically for the fact that they should be disregarded as intrinsically valuable human beings? Should they simply? Does the press need to ask a few of those questions?
Oh, they do. They're not asking them, but of course they need to ask those questions. Rather, the press, by and large, there are notable exceptions, but by and large, plays along with that assumption and just doesn't think a thing of it. So, it's not anything we're going to change anytime soon, which is why listeners to this show and other Christian apologists need to take seriously their responsibility to equip themselves to engage this culture with a persuasive pro-life ethic, and they need to sharpen up their skills and be able to do that because the culture is slipping away from us on this. Cecile Richards did say one thing I agreed with. She pointed to the last election in 2012 and said that was a good barometer of where the culture was. One candidate made his views known on abortion, the other didn't really make much of a case for his pro-life view, and the one who made his case for abortion won. I agree with her on that. The culture isn't with us. We've got an uphill fight in front of us.
Scott Klusendorf is founder and president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You'll find a link to both at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, thank you again, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, it's that time. It's the end of the week, and it's the end of the broadcast day here at Issues Etc. on the Friday, August the 1st. We're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week with you. Four soundbites. You listen, then you vote. 1-877-623-6943. Issues Etc. soundbite of the week next.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi. This is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
At Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, we are mostly looked down upon by cool people. They're always telling us that we take ourselves too seriously. That, apparently, is the uncoolest thing on the planet. We are theological nerds. We get more incensed by bad exegesis than a group of comic book fans who find out the hero was just dreaming. Some people want us to calm down, but we aren't going to. Redeemer, Fort Wayne, haven for theological nerds.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms, everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.